It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 246, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, AI bots in law enforcement and as coding assistants, wilderness connectivity, and why Sherlock Holmes won't die.
You know, one of the side effects of having the cameras on is that I can't fool you by running an 11 Labs simulation of my voice.
Oh,
they haven't gotten the synchronization to the mouth part just quite right yet, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of funny. I keep wanting it though, because I know that there have been examples of I don't know if it's YouTube or maybe some of the other providers that are actually doing foreign language dubbing.
Oh yeah,
in such a way that the lips, the mouth actually matches the language that's being heard rather than the language the actor was originally speaking. Anyway, I want that. Once we get that.
It's great stuff. I've seen it. I haven't seen, like, not so much the lips doing it, but the inflection on the words.
That too,
yeah. And the voice. So it translates it, but the voice still sounds like you.
Right.
And if you get excited about a particular thing or emphasize a particular thing, that's emphasized in Spanish or French or whatever it's translating it to. And it really, even though I think it works better than lip syncing, it's like, okay, obviously I'm not speaking that language, but it just seems a lot better than like dubbing, which is in the past, the actors have just done their own thing when they're dubbing and not tried to match that. Anyway, it's fun stuff. And
as soon as it happens for video, then we won't be able to trust anything and we're done.
Yeah, but then I'll be able to do videos in Spanish and German and
there you go.
Hindi and everything. So
anyway, so what's on your mind this week?
Well, there's a bunch of things. There's an article that I thought was interesting, but maybe not for the same reason that everybody else thinks is interesting. 404 Media had an article, and I think it was picked up by other news things. I think Wired picked it up as well, called "This College Protester Isn't Real. It's an AI-powered undercover bot for cops." So basically, it's about a company that creates, that has these bots that police can use to do things like stop trafficking and drugs, you know, coming into the country and all that stuff. And then what they do is they could sic it on people that they suspect of these crimes. So somebody's got like a, you know, a WhatsApp account or whatever, and they can say, okay, bot, go after them, and the bot will work to kind of chat with them over time and eventually maybe get them to give up information about, like, that they're doing these crimes and all that stuff. And the idea, it's sold on the idea of you could just basically point it at somebody's account and say, go get them, you know. Yeah, and it's interesting. And of course, the scary thing, the thing that the headline I think really tries to push at is like the idea that law enforcement, you know, the cops are using bots to go after people. Like the whole like entrapment thing. Like you, the next person that just befriends you on some site could actually be a bot trying to make you admit that you're doing something wrong or whatever. So
to be fair, we've been approached by bots for years. They're just being used by the other side of the coin.
Exactly. And they're usually very, well, the other side of the coin, though, they're already, the bad guys are already the bad guys.
Yeah.
The cops are supposed to be the good guys. So when the cops do something that sounds like it's out of like George Orwell, we all get a little freaked out saying, oh, they're trying to, you know, do this stuff. That's bad guy behavior, trying to trick normal law-abiding citizens into admitting something. And it's weird. It feels invasive. It feels Black Mirror-like.
The counter argument is that they're not trying to trick law-abiding citizens. They're trying to trick criminals into admitting that they're criminals.
Right. And but they don't know that they're criminals for sure yet. If they did, they wouldn't need this.
Yeah.
Right. They don't have the evidence. Even if, say, at this point, it's only been used for people where it's like, we know, we have some evidence, but just not enough, right, that these people are doing this. The implication is that, well, eventually they'll overstep that if they haven't already and just say, hey, what the hey, just let's go ahead and just stick it on these random kids.
Right.
One of them probably is up to no good, and we'll all make them feel like they've got new friends. and maybe one of them will be up to no good. And we were able to notch one on the chalkboard there, getting another bad guy without actually doing any police work, right? And that's the feel. That's, I guess, the feeling, the eerie feeling that the headline gives, that most of the article gives about it. What I found interesting is two pieces of information. The first piece of information is apparently the company has done this, and the police outfits that have used them have so far netted zero criminals. So it has not actually been successful in getting anybody.
Do you know how long it's been in operation?
It mentions some of the trials going back to 2023.
Whoa, okay.
Okay. So far, it is not like, oh, we unleashed this thing and now hundreds of bad guys are behind bars. It's like, no, nobody. The second thing is the numbers being thrown around, which I suspect is definitely what not a lot of people are paying attention to. The numbers, there's one company that says that the 2023 is they spent $10,000 on this. Another time it was $360,000 contract, and there's another mention of a $500,000 contract. Now, this is software. I mean, it's AI, it's chatbot AI, but it's software. The funny thing is I think of software, it's like if my main job is to maintain servers, like I spend my whole day just maintaining servers, website development, I have a bunch of clients. Chances are I'm probably using a $40 like FTP app. And I see the $40 app and I'm like, yeah, $40, fine. $40 a month or a year? Fine. If it's $100 software, I'm like, ooh, that must be really high quality FTP software. Fine. But I'm not dealing with $10,000 or $360,000, right? So that's a lot. Even if you're like a graphic artist or you have a shop with 10 graphic artists in it and you're paying $600 a year per seat for all of Adobe's apps, you're still at a whole level of magnitude less than $360,000, right? So
Right.
expensive software. And you think about how, well, wait a minute, $500,000 contract, couldn't they just hire like eight trained police officers, live real people that could actually like set this up in the police department and work towards stopping these crimes? Like,
Right.
not get like actually really chat with people if that's what they're doing, actually really go out into the field and do things instead of basically this being just the first step, right? Because the what you want is the chatbot to return a hey, we got this person saying this on chat. So now with that information, go get them.
Right. Yeah. You need to turn a human loose on them at some point. The only
Yeah.
quibble I have, of course, is that 500,000 is not eight people. It's
Maybe. Yeah, five.
at best four.
Okay.
And I say that just because cops get paid, but
Yeah.
there's also all the other expenses associated with hiring people, be
Sure.
it taxes and pensions and bonuses and all that
Okay.
kind of stuff. So, but still, yes, four people could do that job. It would be interesting.
I know it's just so I just thought it was kind of interesting, and I've seen this kind of discrepancy in pricing before when it comes to like new and exciting things. Like I, for years and years and years, I've been doing courses, and if I go back like 10 years ago, I was doing courses, and I had like I decided to have a free one, and I made it my security course. It was like 20 videos, and I said, this one will be free. So I have one free course that people can take and see what my courses are like. And but if I did charge for it, it would be like 20 or 30 bucks for the, the course. Then I saw a headline one day that a company that does security education had been bought for millions of dollars.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I read the description of what the company did, and I said, oh, they just had an online course like mine. I mean, was it better than mine? Maybe they had some cooler graphics. Maybe they had, something a little extra, but I don't think it was like a level of magnitude better than my free or probably $20 or $30 course.
What's
But I.
probably interesting is that they probably had, what's the right word? Personalities. They probably hired
Maybe.
recognizable presenters.
I'm a personality.
Maybe even well, you are within your scope, of course.
Yeah.
But the same thing if you've got somebody maybe who's a someone who works in this industry deeply, specifically security only. doing the presentation or presenting the course. You're right, though.
Perhaps
I'm sure it's the same content,
it's
right? That's the
positioning,
thing.
it's framing. It's like if you
Yeah.
say we're going to start this company, it's going to have this name, we're going to have investors, right? We're going to have some name like a SoftBank or some virtual VC company is going to be back there in the list, right? And we're going to do a 2 years of development, and we're going to create this thing, and we're going to have marketing people, salespeople go out to corporations and
Right.
sell this as a package. Oh, your 1,000 employees can get this training for this amount, and you just position it the right way, and suddenly you're talking about like five figures in terms of your sales package, and then the company valuation of millions. But the content's the kind of the same, and it's like kind of the same thing here. It's like you could probably have like two guys saying we could set up chatbots to like try to help police, and they could probably do it and sell like a $200 software package that that police can get. But then if you frame it differently, suddenly it's like $500,000.
It's funny because, when you think about it, everything else being absolutely identical, the police would be more likely to trust or think of the expensive one as being legitimate, whereas that $200 version is probably just a couple guys in a garage. That can't be real, even though it's exactly the same thing.
I mean, it's framing. I mean, that's the same thing with like a a $10,000 package to train our employees to not be susceptible to phishing attacks. I want that, not the $30 course. That kind of thing. Oh, or just like the free YouTube videos that we could just point the employees to tell.
Well, you and I get that all the time, though, right? I mean, when we sell patronage or when we sell courses or when we sell anything, one of the pieces of feedback we get is, why would I want to buy this from you when I can get it on YouTube for free? And, yes, we've got value add, yada, yada. But the point is that everybody's comparing to all the body of work that's out there already for free and its associated quality.
So it's just interesting. I think we're at the point of AI now where there is a lot of this going on of positioning, selling. Not this is for police and stuff, but I could see companies being like, oh, we have an AI that could predict the stock market slightly more accurately than another, than human analysts, and it's going to cost, $100,000 to have access to it, whereas all it really is a really complex ChatGPT prompt, that you could just do on your own with a $20 a month, ChatGPT package. But it happens with new technology all the time, and we're at that point.
It's funny.
Anyway.
It's the when I saw the note in our show notes, I immediately thought of the episode of Leverage Redemption, a TV show that it just released their third or fourth season. I'm not even sure anymore. And we've been working
Watching
our way
it.
through the episodes. Are you? So the second episode included
I just watched
basically,
the second episode last night. Perfect timing.
yes, they've introduced this concept of being able to completely fake someone by using AI to present the image of translate or translate the voice of and basically fool somebody entirely online. Not a bot in this case, it was an actor, going through the motions, but it was an attempt to fool somebody into believing they were talking to not just somebody that they didn't realize they weren't talking to, but somebody that didn't actually exist. It was a supposedly an amalgamation of an average, if you will, of a bunch of people. But I just thought it was interesting that that same concept of undercover bot, undercover AI. Being used to fool other people. Now, in this case, hilarity ensues when the person needs to turn up in person, but that's part of the episode, not necessarily my point. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of coincidentally funny. I enjoy that show too.
Oh yeah, no, definitely glad to see it back. I'm a little worried now that because as we previously mentioned on the show, Noah Wyle now has a another hit on his hands.
Yeah, he's a busy
With the,
guy.
so now I'm afraid that it's like, oh no, will Leverage Redemption survive that? Like, is he going to be now so return to A-list
Right.
and now not be able to do and then they'll actually have two A-list actors that are having would have trouble fitting it into their schedule.
The
But
interesting thing is that I believe that this season of Leverage was recorded actually some time ago,
yeah,
and it's
no,
been
I
in
think
there for a
so. Yeah,
while. So anyway.
I think yeah, so I think it was before Noah Wiley knew he was going to be a popular TV doctor once again.
So, question.
Yeah.
Are software engineers doomed?
I hope not. I don't think so.
It's an interesting question because I think it applies to a lot of different jobs, a lot of different careers, a lot of different skill sets. And the article, or I'm sorry, the video that I ended up pointing to here is OpenAI's Sarah Friar talking about what they're calling agentic software engineers. So basically, the model is that you give this AI agent a description of what it is you wanted to create. It goes off and creates it. It writes the software to create the app or do the whatever the thing is you're asking it to do. And I think a lot of people are concerned about that. I know that I have used, God, I can't remember if it was Claude or ChatGPT, to write me some code. I was, wanting to bulk process some of the of my articles, my Ask Leo articles, and I just had it write me some Python code that would fetch things from the database and do things to them, and it was actually quite useful, quite interesting. But I think the question is kind of the wrong question to be asking. Industries and jobs are going to change because of AI. I don't think there's a question about that. And certainly software engineering is apparently on the leading edge of that, in part because I think a lot of the AI companies will have a lot of software engineers to compare against, but they also have a good model of exactly what that job is supposed to be, and they focus training their AIs on doing that job. However, one of the things I've discovered using AI is that I need to do a way better job of describing the problem I'm trying to solve. And I think that more than anything else is going to be one of the ways that jobs change. People that are able to more clearly and completely articulate a problem and/or a proposed solution are the ones who will benefit from all of this. If you're just somebody who takes a job, a description of a job and turns it into code, well, heck, that's something that you and I have faced, for years, is that especially back in my Microsoft days, there were always people telling you what the solution should be, and they were always wrong. They were always fuzzy. They were always off the edge. And you had real problems sometimes coming up with a product that they had intended to describe or that would actually work in whatever environment they were pushing it at. I think it's that same skill set change that is one of the things that's going to be driven here in, with AIs taking over some jobs, is it moves the importance of what it is you're doing up a level, if you will. Your ability to describe your problem is, and the problem, of course, is that a lot of people can't do that. A lot of people have a very difficult time transforming a fuzzy idea that they have in their head into words that, well, anybody, be it human or AI, could then turn into a real product. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting that software engineers being doomed is kind of pointless. It's how does software engineering and software creation change when you add AI into the mix?
Yeah, I like what you said about people can't, have a hard time describing what they want. A lot of people can't even describe what they want when searching for something on Google. It's so common. And I have done a lot of programming using AI chatbots as my assistant. And it's never been the case where I've been just able to ask it to make something for me. Like you see a lot of exaggerated articles or claims where it's like you can just describe the website you want and it builds the website for you. It's like, no, not really. You have to work with it, right? And and also there's a big difference between demo website and real one. Like if you want a demo website, it can actually get pretty far along. But if you want the real thing, right, there's content to be made, there's tweaking, there's all sorts of stuff. I've asked it to assist me. I find that I can't just say, well, here's what I want. Here's the description. Give me the code. Done. Like it's usually I start working on the code, but then when I get to a point where I know, ChatGPT could do it better. Like I want a regular expression that will just get me this text out of the string,
Right.
right? It's like, oh, this will take me 5 minutes or 10 seconds to just ask ChatGPT. I can even just feed it the example. I've got this. I want a regular expression that gives me that, and it'll give it to me. And now I've gotten past that line. So I use ChatGPT as a tool to get some of the more monotonous things out of the way, but it's not being creative. It's not going and saying, oh, here's interesting. Now that you've got this, it would be really cool is if you also did this for the user. It's like, that's me doing that. I'm just asking ChatGPT for some of the little building blocks. And
Right.
often it doesn't get me the right answer. Like it'll get me something that doesn't work or something that works, but it's not quite right. And I have to go back and forth with it, just like I might if there was like an intern. That was doing the work for me.
But though, is it not getting it,
Yeah.
or you realizing that you haven't completely specified the problem?
Yeah, it's a combination of those. Definitely sometimes though, it is it not getting it. My definition's been fine, and all I need to do is I look at it and I could think, oh yeah, this isn't working at all. Before I go any further, just tell it that doesn't work. Like, that's it. And it'll respond with something like, let me think. I'll bet that it is, ChatGPT actually does this now. It's like, I'll bet it's because something like, the version of Python or whatever is this, that. And it, try this. And it gives me a new bit of code. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's going to work. And that was what I was looking for in the first place. And so my original description was not amended any more than just saying that didn't work. And it just looked at the most obvious thing that could be getting in the way and produced an alternative version that did work. So
Interesting.
it's interesting, and it's definitely sped things up. It's made things more possible, but it would not have allowed a different person other than me to actually have done the same thing. Like it needed to be me with the idea, with knowing what I wanted, and with working with it to actually end up with the result. I was the real coder there. I just had an assistant that was doing some menial work for me to help me along.
Obviously, the OpenAI Sarah Friar, she's talking about what they're planning or what they're
Oh,
promising.
yeah.
Typical salesy type stuff. And to be fair, yes, it's early and they always promise more than they can deliver today. But give it enough time and they're definitely going to be making progress in that direction. What it dawned on me is that I'm talking about, the where humans will need to get better is at describing the problem. That's called prompt engineering these days.
Prompt engineer, yeah.
And that is exactly where I think a lot of people who are interested in AI or who are interested in staying in the field where they're concerned about AI encroaching, is where they might want to consider spending a little bit of time becoming more familiar with it.
Yeah, and also consider the fact that a lot of the things that AI is going to be good at coding are the things that coders don't want to do. Like to paraphrase a famous song about coding, why don't you write the damn login page yourself is a line in a song. And it's the same kind of same thing. You get to the point where it's like, oh, I've developed this really cool thing. Oh, I need a login page. I've developed this brilliant algorithm to do this amazing thing. And now because it's just me, I'm also the one that's going to have to code the damn login page. And it's like, oh no, I don't need to do that anymore. ChatGPT, give me a login page. And it's great. I could stick to the genius part and let ChatGPT do the damn login page.
Funny. Yep.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah, we actually, when we ended last week's episode, you and I kept going. We had an interesting discussion on something that kind of tied back into like earlier. I was earlier this year, I went to New Zealand and I was off grid at least twice for kind of for in different ways for backpacking trips. And of course, I often go on these backpacking trips, and sometimes I'm kind of off grid, sometimes I'm not. And an interesting thing happened on this trip. First is that my first backpacking trip, I didn't realize I really wasn't off grid hardly at all. I assumed going into the middle of nowhere, New Zealand, around territory that looked with good reason, like Mordor, that I would not have connectivity. However, at the second place that I stayed, the second hut, I spotted somebody standing on a hill nearby talking on their cell phone. And I was like, huh. I checked my cell phone and had no connection, but then walked up to where they were and noticed I had two bars. So yeah, it wasn't exactly like a I had coverage everywhere, but it was a like there were spotty coverage around
Right.
that I could get to. I was not completely off grid. The second place I went, which was in Fjordland, which is just very much like far away from any towns or anything like that, very mountainous. I knew famously it's very off grid. And there definitely is nothing, right? But I got reminded by you last week that I may have actually had satellite connectivity. Like I
Yes.
may have been able to send an SMS. I don't think so. I didn't try it, but because I was in New Zealand and I think it's only enabled in the US now, I don't think it would have worked for me there. Though there's no real good reason why it wouldn't have, just like a contract didn't have a signature for New Zealand or whatever. But
Our
doing the
friend
same.
Randy and Kit, who are on
Yeah.
the ship, living on the ship, they ran into exactly that.
Yeah.
For them, Starlink didn't work,
Yeah.
not because of any technological issue, but because of the country that they happened to be docked at hadn't signed up, hadn't signed a contract or hadn't allowed it or whatever,
Yeah.
which I find both reassuring from a technology point of view that it would have worked.
Yeah.
And frustrated that it's bureaucracy that gets in the way.
Sure. And I think the next time I go backpacking in New Zealand, it's probably very likely that SMS via satellite will be enabled. But even without that, one of the places I stayed, because the places are supposed to be really rustic and way out there, it had solar panels and lights that were solar powered. So in other words, as soon as it got dark, the battery that was charged by the solar panels turned on the lights. There was also an emergency fire detection system that was electrically powered by the
Wow.
solar panels and the battery. And they had six USB outlets for people that wanted to charge up their devices, also coming off that battery. And it occurred to me that it would not have been hard to actually put a Starlink
Right.
satellite dish there. Maybe they would have had upgraded their batteries and solar power, but it would not have been hard to actually do that and at least have coverage part of the day, if not, during like daylight hours, if not maybe all day. In fact, there are some private lodges there because you could do that hike both in the public route, which is what I was on, but there's also a pay thousands of dollars and you could stay at these kind of luxury lodges that are there. And I never looked into it, but I was like, well, I wouldn't be surprised if actually they might have Starlink there. And that might be one of their things. Hey, get Wi-Fi in the evenings,
Right.
And so the whole idea of going into the backcountry and being completely offline is almost gone. And it is. It's it, that bothers me. And there are several different levels of this. There's like being online where you can actually participate online. Like you can stream video, you could look at social media, you can chat with people, you can do all your check your email, get work done, right?
Right.
That's like one level. Then you can go down to the level where your connection kind of sucks, right? The one or two bars on your phone, you're not going to be streaming any video. You're not going to be doing any of that stuff. You are going to be like maybe getting some text messages back and forth. But it's great for checking in. You kind of feel connected. You're just like not going to work, right? And then there's the like the tiniest level. The tiniest level would be like the satellite SMS, which they've got the emergency stuff now, or they've had the emergency stuff first. But going that is one like tiny bit of it. But then another tiny bit of it is just going to a lower level emergency, like checking in, I'm okay, or somebody telling you that, oh, there's something going on that you need to know about, even though you're out there in the backcountry. There's that level of things, which is still, to me, feels like a really high level of connectivity. Even the inverted part of that, the negative part of that, not getting a message when you could get a message,
Right, is a
has
message.
a it is a message. So, like, if knowing that if somebody could send me a SMS via satellite, but I haven't gotten anything.
Right.
Tells me that there's no disaster, no emergency, or no incredibly good news. Hey, our friends had the baby and you're the godfather. You know, there, you don't get like, you know, it's not always bad, right? You just know there's nothing. Even at the end of this trip, I knew at the very, very, very end where you get picked up by a boat, there is a, like, you should have a bar or two. So when I got there and I put my backpack down and I celebrated the end of the hike, I turned my phone on and I had like one message from my wife saying, I know you won't get this, but I hope you're having a great time and all that. Can't wait to talk to you when you get back. And that was it. That was the only message waiting for me.
Right.
Which gave me lots of information beyond that, right? Because I knew there's nothing, no emergency, right. No, like call immediately as soon as you are, as soon as you get this. None of that was there. So I knew everything was okay. I was able to like relax for a few minutes, you know, and text back. It really does create that, like there's something about going into the backcountry and being like, things may happen that I need to know about, but I won't.
Right.
Like, so there isn't, so I'm in kind of this Schrodinger's cat stasis thing where it doesn't matter. I might as well free that part of my brain up completely because there is absolutely nothing I can do to get that information. And then a little thing like SMS satellite would be like, no, that's gone now. Like any moment I could get a message saying that there's an emergency.
You'll know whether the cat is dead or alive.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that I haven't gotten that message tells me that everything's fine, which is also a weird feeling of connection. You know,
right.
I don't know. It's interesting. And we, I think we're within a year or two of the end of that because the SMS messaging over satellite will be rolled out worldwide pretty much. I probably am already done with that here in the US. Like if I go camping in the mountains somewhere where there's no connectivity in Colorado, I would still have that SMS over satellite.
I don't think it's rolled out yet, at least not with any ubiquity. This is something that I do pay attention to because in my role as for communications, and by that I mean radio communications, for the nonprofit that I help, we go out into the backcountry sometimes to rescue companion animals that have issues and so forth. Mm-hmm. We're often outside of both cell and other kinds of coverage. So we're paying very close attention to exactly what this kind of stuff might mean, because for the search and rescue groups in general, be they animal or human, this could be big, right? The ability to communicate back in real time or semi-real time is could make a huge difference in how we do our things and our ability to do them effectively. There is existing technology that uses satellites. It's the product name is the InReach from Garmin, and it uses satellites. I think it's using the Iridium network, but I could be wrong. It's not use. We know that it's not using Starlink. But the issue with it is simply that a single SMS message is usually thinking about a 20 to 40 minute round trip, which means that you're not having a real conversation or a real time conversation, but you are still able to get a message in and or out. So anyway, yeah, it's exciting. It's interesting. I am looking forward to the time when we can basically get rid of our InReaches because all of my folks in the field have mobile phones that are satellite SMS capable.
Well, you should note, and I included the link, that this is definitely already active for iPhones. iOS 18 or later is required. iPhone 14, the model number 14 or later. And it's in the US and Canada. And its satellite network is Globestar. And it has been active since iOS 18. I don't know if it was, I think it might have been an update after iOS 18 came out. But it is definitely here. So I just have not tried it yet.
They are not restricting it to emergencies. You can have conversations.
Right. Yep. It was the change, because it was previously available for emergencies only. So there we go. So at some point this year, I will probably try it out while camping. I mean, I guess I could just try it out now in my own home. It would be probably, I would really like to just try it out when I legitimately have no other connection.
I was going to say, you want to confirm you got no bars.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
I did last year before this came out. I did do the demo. Actually, whenever it came out, I did do the emergency demo. So the emergency demo actually uses the satellites and it does everything just like you're really sending an emergency message, but it's even communicating with the satellite. And it's just that the message isn't going anywhere. And it was a free,
Oh,
like you could do it. And I did that while camping. Well, I guess it was no, yeah, last year I did do it. I remember where I was. So it was 2 years ago or a year and a half approximately. I did it out in the wilderness. It does a little satellite tracking. It makes it simulate like you are contacting somebody and you just get a canned response from the from Globestar saying that, the message has been received and if this were an actual emergency, we would forward it on or whatever.
right.
So it will probably be similar to doing that, except that I would actually, say hello to my wife and she'd say hello back and all that.
Dan, I'm assuming, so if you're out in the field with that, you have no other connectivity but the satellite. Presumably, your phone is still periodically pinging the satellite anyway, because if your wife, for example, wanted to initiate the conversation, the network would need to know where you are and how to reach you.
It probably pings it occasionally because I remember using it to send them a message, the test message. I basically what happens is because there's no big antenna on this thing to communicate. I had to hold it up, and at some point there was a graphic on the screen that told me to point my iPhone like off at an angle. And then when I
Oh, right.
pointed it off at an angle, it kind of matched some lines up, and it
Yes.
was like, oh, good connection right here. And then I was able to play around with that. And so it was communicating with the satellites and trying to get a good signal, despite the fact the antennas aren't really optimized very well for that. So my thinking is for receiving messages, it probably just keeps trying. And it may be a delay, 5, 10 minutes, an hour, whatever. And then it kind of like gets a little just hint that a signal's coming in and grabs the message and says, oh, you've got something. So that'll be interesting. That'll be a test I'll have to do as well. I'll have to have whoever I'm testing with in the other end, probably my wife, I'll have to have her maybe give her a time and say, try texting me at this time and
I'm
let's
going to have
see
to
how long it
reach out
takes.
to my folks who are out in the field and see what kind of capabilities they experience. Very
Yeah,
cool.
it looks like it's using iMessage, which is so Apple's messaging system. So Globestar is then going coordinating directly with iMessage. So Apple's got a link somewhere between Globestar and Apple servers. And that's how it's all working. Skipping SMS, skipping the internet, and skipping any mobile phone provider
Oh,
communication.
so this would be only iMessage recipients then as well. Both ends probably have to be iMessage. That's
Well, no. I don't know. That's a good question. Like
Yeah.
so yeah, the other person, if the other person was using SMS, would it go through? Because there are certain ways, like for instance, on my Mac, I get SMS messages, but there's no cellular connection. My iPhone gets the SMS message and forwards it to my Mac.
Oh yeah, I've got the same thing with mine
Yeah.
on the
So
Google
the
side. There's features
yeah.
built into the Google ecosystem that do that, but it all relies on the app running on the phone.
So yeah, I don't let's see if it says anything here. Just a quick search. Oh, yeah, it does. It no, it right there in the subhead, it says you can send iMessages or SMS messages.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
So it is I guess it's just your iPhone needs to have iMessage, right? Which would make sense.
Sure.
Like you're set. You're using an iPhone. That's what's here. You've got iMessage turned on. It's going to go Globestar to iMessage, and then iMessage will figure out, oh, this needs to go somehow over to the SMS system. I'll facilitate that.
Very
Interesting.
cool. All right. So that's cool. What else is cool? I'm going to jump in here. We've been watching Watson, which is a show on Paramount. It's a classic CBS a medical slash whodunit kind of things. And I mention it not because of the show itself, although it's a fine show and we enjoy watching it. But it just, for some reason, it amazes me how much mileage the entertainment industry is getting out of Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock in this particular case doesn't exist. He's supposedly dead. Watson is doing other things, but Moriarty's still around and having an impact on everything. Get the idea. The reason that came to mind, though, is because we also last night started watching Sherlock and Daughter. Completely different show. Completely different. I mean, it's actually set in the 1890s, I guess. It's on the CW. But it just amazes me. There's Sherlock here, there's Sherlock there, there's a little bit of Sherlock
Enola
Holmes
Holmes is another,
there. Yeah.
yeah,
Yes,
another
Enola Holmes
offshoot.
is a great show. We enjoyed that quite a bit. So anyway, I'm just going to mention Watson for folks who are interested in Sherlock Holmes-ish medical dramas.
Yeah.
It's set in modern time, and it's fun to watch.
I'm going to mention a book I just read. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Thursday Next series by Jasper Ford, but it was you that recommended to me, and I believe you had it as a Ain't It Cool maybe a couple of years ago, the book The Rook.
Yes.
And it's a series.
Yes.
So the funny thing is, somebody else recommended to me this Thursday Next series, and the first book is called The Eyre Affair, Eyre spelled as in Jane Eyre. And the best way to describe it to you or to anybody that's read The Rook is imagine The Rook, but even weirder. It's a very similar, like set in Britain, and there's supernatural stuff going on
Huh?
in modern day. But oh my goodness, there's time travel. There are werewolves and vampires, and the main thing is there are literary characters that can exist in the real world and real world characters that can go into the book worlds from books. And it all takes place in an alternate version of our present day or a couple decades ago,
Right.
where history is different, as in the Crimea War never ended and is still going on. So everything from the Crimean War till now is completely different in terms of history.
Ah.
And popular culture is completely based around classic English literature. People are fans of things, not pop stars, not movie stars. They're fans of Shakespeare. They're fans of Milton. They're fans of Wordsworth. Everybody is obsessed. Everybody's part of different societies. Every value of like cult po of popular culture is classic English literature. It's very fascinating, and it's very weird, and it has a sharper sense of British humor than the Rook series. A lot more ridiculous things happen, but there's still mysteries, there's still action and all of that. And it's a very long series. It started b way before the Rook. I think 2001 is the first book, and there might be like 8 or 9 or 10 of them at this
Wow, okay.
point. And even though it does have a lot to do with literature, like obviously the book Jane Eyre plays into
Right.
this first one a lot. I've never read Jane Eyre, but and the author's very careful to make sure you don't have to. Things will be
Okay, good.
explained
Glad to
to
hear it.
you, and you'll get the idea. Okay, this is what happened in Jane Eyre, and this is why it's relevant to this story, and this is all this stuff. Anyway, really good, fun stuff. I have a new series that I guess I will occasionally be reading the next one of until I'm finished.
Cool. In terms of self-promotion, I'm going to do something a little bit different this week. Rather than pick out a specific article, I'm sure you have a list like this yourself too. I find myself answering questions from people by pointing them at some of my existing articles. And some of those get pointed to significantly more often than others. They're kind of like, I've always thought of sites like Ask Leo as a glorified FAQ, right? There's frequently asked questions, although not all 5,000 of my articles have been asked frequently. This is kind of like the ones that I originally created a list for myself because I had to go copy the link so often. So it was just easier to have a list that I could copy it from. And then I just turned it into a page. So my most referenced articles, I think, is a useful page for people to be aware of, maybe browse through and see what kinds of things are perhaps the most common answers to some of the most common questions that I get.
Cool. I'm going to point people to a video of mine about customizing your Mac. It doesn't always have to be a complex thing. I just have a little list of like easy ways, little switches you can throw, basically, or quick things you can do to make your Mac look different than everybody else's.
It's funny, I don't know about you, but over the years, I've become less enamored with customization, only because I end up redoing things so often that it's just not worth it anymore.
Yeah, I get
Whereas I
it.
know certainly for people that are in it for the long haul, in it for a single installation that they use forever, it makes a total amount of sense, but I just got tired of doing it all. All
Okay.
righty. Well, I think that wraps us up for another week. As always, thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you again or talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh246. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of Askaleo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.